welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. It's crossover week here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Got John Butchko. He is the host of Locked On Jets. You can also find his work at ganggreennation.com. You can always find me on Twitter at BBPeacock. And of course, you can find both of our shows and all of the shows here on the Locked On Podcast Network on all of your favorite podcast apps. John, how are you, sir? Thanks for joining the show. I'm really interested to talk Jets draft because I think it was one of the best in the league.
Well, I'm certainly excited to be here. And, you know, the thing that's great about this week is that, you know, you go against your division rival. It's like there's a lot of animosity, a lot of hatred. I mean, I think it's tough for an AFC East fan to really dislike an NFC West team. So it'll be a nice cordial discussion, I think.
Yes, I think so too. Yeah, it's funny because not a lot of my listeners, but there's a really loud, small segment of my listeners that get really, really mad. And especially if the opposing host is sort of antagonistic in any way. And when an opposing host picked their team to win, and we'll see what happens when we do our crossovers the week of the Jets and 49ers matchup, and we'll find out later this week when that matchup exactly will be. But, you know, if you pick the Jets to win that matchup, you're going to hear from some of my listeners, although you're not on Twitter as much, so you might not hear as much of that. But it is funny to see fan bases get fired up when someone picks against their team. But you got to pick somebody to win. The 49ers had a lot of W's last year that mounted up. Not as many for the Jets, but I think it's team on the come up. Before we get into the draft and some of that stuff and what the new look teams look like for both of these franchises, I want to talk about the newest Jet. And he's even newer than the draft picks, and that is the great Frank Gore. Future Hall of Famer, in my opinion. Future Hall of Famer, probably in the opinion of most of the listeners of Locked On 49ers. He signs a one-year contract with the Jets, reuniting with Adam Gase. He played for Gase's Miami Dolphins in 2018, but also Miami Adam Gase was an assistant offensive coach on the 2008 49ers in the young prime Frank Gore years. So I'm sure he was very impressed by that young Frank Gore, and impressed enough by the older Frank Gore in 2018 that he wanted to give him another job, his 16th season in the NFL. It's awesome, man. I hope Frank Gore plays forever.
Yeah, and it's interesting because the Jets signed this guy who was like a future Hall of Famer, and you'd think it would be this enormous move. But I think at this point, Frank Gore's career, he's going to be 37 during the season. What the Jets are looking for is more just a guy who can give Le'Veon Bell a few plays off. I think he's clearly brought in to be a backup and just for depth. And it's a signing that I see the logic in, because the Jets did not have a lot behind Bell. They did draft LaMichael Perine out of Florida in the fourth round, but they were a team that could use a little bit extra depth at the running back position. So it makes a lot of sense. And I don't think Gore is going to cost a lot of money at this point. So more of a, you know, it's fun. Like I said, it's fun because you're signing this future Hall of Famer, but he's really just brought in to kind of be a role player as kind of a backup.
Right. Yeah. And it's amazing that Frank Gore wants to continue his career in that sort of a role. And he's already been, you know, a rotational guy for the last few years of his career. And another thing, and people might think, okay, he's a goal line back, more of a plotter at this point in his career, but he's a really good pass protecting back. And that might be one of the things that Adam Gase is seeing here, because Le'Veon Bell is obviously a really good third down player, and Frank Gore can get some tough carries in the early downs if they need him to, but he can also block like crazy, and he can protect your quarterback, which is the thing that it seems like this offseason has been about so far. And I got to give kudos to Joe Douglas for the team he's putting together. And this was his first draft as GM of the Jets. And if I'm not mistaken, and you could correct me on this if I'm wrong, but it seems like they're finally putting more resources into helping out their quarterback, Sam Darnold, which is the way it should be, right?
Absolutely. Now, if you go before the draft, they made a number of offensive line signings. They signed George Fant from a team in Seattle you guys know. They also brought in Connor McGovern from Denver. Center. They re-signed Alex Lewis, guard. They also signed Greg Van Roten, a guard from Carolina. And then with their first round pick, of course, they drafted Mekhi Becton. And this was the first time the Jets have invested a first round pick in the offensive line since 2006, when they picked the Brickenshaw Ferguson and Nick Mangold. And this is the first time the Jets invested a first or a second round pick in 10 years. It was 2010. Wow. It was Vladimir Dukas, which did not go so well. And in that time, I think they've only drafted two offensive linemen in the third round. There was Chuma Edoga last year and Brian Winters in 2013. The offensive line was the weakest part of a really bad Jets offense in 2019. I mean, you watch some of these games, it was unbelievable how poor the pass protection was. And they were bad run blocking too, but there were some games in the early season where they just could not pick up a basic stunt. So it was long overdue. And I don't think you get to the point where the Jets got to in 2019 in the offensive line overnight. I think it was a direct product of them never investing early draft picks in the offensive line. And that was something that needed to change. And I expect in maybe the first step on the way towards giving Sam Darnold the proper protection in front of him.
Yeah, and it's so important. And that was a pretty good draft, actually, thinking back to that DeBrickshaw, Ferguson, Mangold draft. So well done. They needed to go back to the offensive line. And I thought maybe that they were setting up for wide receiver at pick 11, and it was really a hinge point in the first round of the draft when you were looking at it and trying to do mock drafts. It was like, okay, I know the Jets are going to go wide receiver or offensive tackle. At least I'm 99% sure they've got to be going with one of those positions. But which one is it? And I thought they were setting up to go wide receiver because they spent so much and brought so many bodies in at the offensive line, but they were still missing that one obvious piece, the long-term left tackle. So it was still a little bit of a window there. And I wonder if, and maybe you have some insight to this, was there something with the Jets strategy where they could have gone wide receiver? Was there was it like Becton or bust, or maybe they would have gone wide receiver there? Or what is the team saying about that 11th pick, or was it just offensive line all along for them?
I think it was offensive line all along. Last year when they hired Joe Douglas, he made a point that he was going to build this team from the inside out. And lots of people around Joe Douglas know that he prioritizes the offensive line. Now, you're absolutely right. It was either going to be a receiver or a tackle. And this is just my read on the situation. I think what the Jets did was they took a calculated gamble that given the depth of this year's wide receiver class, they could get somebody that they wanted in the second round. Whereas the drop-off from the first tier to the second tier at the tackle position was more pronounced in the 2020 draft class. So I think what they did was, I don't know that they would have taken the same approach if the tackle position was the deeper of the two. I think because of the quality of the receivers, they felt like they could still kind of get somebody who would be really good with their second pick.
Absolutely. And I think that strategy paid off beautifully for the Jets looking at this draft, at least looking at it on paper. And obviously with every draft, it's a coin flip and half of these guys are going to be terrible. So we'll find out which one of those it is for the New York Jets draft class. But really quick before we get deeper into the draft and what this Jets team is going to look like when they play the 49ers in 2020. And by the way, if you're listening to this podcast and wondering why we're talking so much about the Jets, we're taking an off-season look at some of the 49ers opponents, and the Jets are obviously looking at some opponents for the Jets going into the 2020 season. So that's why we're doing these crossovers right now, and the 49ers will be playing the AFC East. The AFC East will be playing the NFC West, and it's fun because a lot of these teams we don't see very often. So when the 49ers do see the Jets, what sort of development has Sam Darnold done since his days at USC? What kind of a quarterback is he right now?
Well, it's kind of difficult to say because they have not really put the pieces in front of him. We kind of talked about it a little bit earlier, how bad the offensive line was. I think all things considered, he's developed pretty well through the first 2 years because the pass protection has not been there. The wide receiver core has not been great either. They lost Robbie Anderson in free agency to Carolina, and Anderson was a good deep threat, but he's not the kind of guy you want to run your passing game through. Last year, they pretty much played the entire year without Chris Herndon. He was the tight end they drafted in the fourth round back in 2018, who put together a solid rookie year, but it was just a nightmare year for Chris Herndon. He was suspended at the start of the year, suffered an injury before he returned from his suspension, and then finally, when he got back, he got hurt the first game he was back. I think he had like one catch all season. So the Jets have put a lot of adversity in front of Sam Darnold, and I think in a situation like that, what I'd be looking for is this guy more or less keeping his head above water? Is every now and then he putting together a really spectacular game? And I think the answer to that is yes. And I think the other thing you have to remember about Darnold is that this was the draft class he was supposed to come out in. He is actually younger than Joe Burrow. That's so crazy. I feel like he was holding his own there were some bad games. Everybody remembers the Monday night game against New England where they caught him on the microphone saying he was seeing ghosts. But I think all things considered, when you look at the situation the Jets have put him in and his age, I think he's on a pretty good trajectory right now.
Yeah, I thought that was awful the way that was put on TV like that, and it made Sam Darnold look really bad, and I don't think it was really fair to him. But what's interesting is his record as a starter for the Jets, who didn't have a good record in 2019, he was a winning quarterback. Over 60% of his passes completed, 7-6 record in 2019 as a starter. He missed a few games with injury. So, yeah, I would say for that team, he's absolutely holding his head above water in his second year. And you mentioned his age, which still blows me away every time I hear that he's still younger than Joe Burrow, who was the number one pick in the draft this year. Imagine how good Sam Darnold would have played in college football if he had two more years of seasoning at USC.
Is notable is that he missed three games with mono. And if you look at those three games, the Jets offense couldn't do anything. I think they averaged under 4 yards per play without Darnold in the lineup. So you look at his stats and you compare him to other NFL quarterbacks, they may not be that impressive, but I think that shows you just how important he was and just how much he was lifting the team up when he was in there.
All right, more with John Buchko, host of Locked On Jets. I want to talk about this draft class, this fantastic crop of rookies for New York that will potentially be making an impact, I think, early when the Jets take on the 49ers in 2020. This episode is brought to you in part by Built Bar. Built Bars are tasty and Built Bars are healthy. If you're looking for that energy, you need a snack. This is ideal, the ideal snack for me, because you don't want anything heavy. You don't want anything that is going to stick in your teeth when you're trying to do a podcast or a meeting. You got the video conference, right? You don't want to be the guy with stuff all over his teeth. The key here is the health part to go along with the tastiness with low sugar, which is key for me, because some of these bars are like 400 calories. They're sugar bombs. And it's crazy. It's supposed to be this thing you're doing healthy for yourself to have this bar instead of a meal, and you might as well be having dessert. But Built Bars, filled with protein, they taste as good as a candy bar. Bars are covered in 100% chocolate, soft and chewy. They're very easy to eat, smooth, love the texture. My favorite so far has been the peanut butter, although I've got a mix in my box that I haven't finished yet. Mint chocolate is a really good flavor, but the peanut butter is my favorite. Here's what's crazy. 20 grams of protein, only 3 grams of sugar. You would never taste this and think it was only 3 grams of sugar. So that's the biggest thing to me that makes me love these Built Bars is they taste fantastic, but they're not sugar bombs. So low calorie, low sugar, low carb, but high in protein, high in fiber, exactly what you need in a snack. And the best part is if you go to BuiltBar.com, use promo code LOCKEDON, you'll get $10 off your first order. Use promo code LOCKEDON, that's one word, LOCKEDON, for $10 off at BuiltBar.com. Okay, let's talk. We talked a little bit about Mekhi Becton. He's a massive man, and I know the 49ers were linked to Mekhi Becton a little bit, and there was this video that John Lynch did before the draft where he was showing his home office, and he was watching tape, and it happened to be a Louisville game, and so everyone put that in. Everyone's like, okay, lock it in. The 49ers are going to take Mekhi Becton in the first round if he's there. And he obviously didn't get to the 49ers. I don't know if he's exactly the style of offensive lineman that Kyle Shanahan would have been looking for. But you mentioned playing the draft and the strengths of this draft, and I think it was really smart because they banked on a potential starting caliber wide receiver being for them there in the second round, and they got Denzel Mims, who is a super high upside player in round two. So I love that combination of going offensive line in round one with Mekhi Becton, Denzel Mims in round two. And then they came back in round three with another Bay Area kid that I think was a steal in the third round. And he didn't have a chance to work out. And I think that hurt a lot of prospects in this draft that either didn't get medical rechecks or didn't get a chance to work out and put down 40 times. And I'm sure Ashton Davis's 40 time would have been fantastic. The safety from Cal, you get him in round three. I don't know about value-wise with some of the other third and fourth rounders, but one of my favorite, I like Cameron Clark late in round four, probably a guard in the NFL out of Charlotte. But my favorite pick, I think, for the Jets, you go all the way to round five and Bryce Hall. He was someone that I thought was perfect for the 49ers. Again, someone that had a pretty nasty ankle injury, wasn't able to do those rechecks. I think that's why he fell like a rock in the draft. But if he's healthy, you get a starting caliber player, in my opinion, in Bryce Hall at cornerback. And then potentially maybe his athleticism isn't there post-injury. He's not fast enough for you at corner. He's got a safety net of potentially playing safety in the NFL as well. Smart player. So slam dunk pick there. And when you add it to what they did in the early part of the draft, I think Joe Douglas gets huge marks for his first draft in charge of the Jets. How do Jets fans feel about it? And how do you feel about that Jets draft?
I think Jets fans, for the most part, are pretty happy with what they did. You know, Becton in the first round. The only thing I can compare Becton to when you watch his college footage at Louisville is he reminds me of like one of those small school prospects where there's a guy who's an NFL prospect at like a lower level school.
Yeah.
He's just so physically dominant that like he doesn't need to use proper technique to dominate. Becton was doing this against ACC competition. I mean, he was doing it against major college competition.
Right. No, so I just love that. Yeah, because he's so big. There's that one blindside play that I saw where he literally takes the – it was either an outside linebacker or a defensive end, but it was an edge player, and he took him – it wasn't like a play that was already going on the sideline. He took him from the snap all the way out of bounds. That was pretty amazing. And, yeah, he's just bigger and stronger than everybody he played against.
Yeah, and then you talk about Mims in the second round. I mean, I'll tell you, the Friday night that was day two of the NFL draft, they're in the second round. And Jets fans are very anxious about getting a wide receiver. And I'm hearing from all these people I know, they got to trade up into the 30s to get Mims. They got to trade up 10 spots to get Mims. They ended up trading down and still getting him. And, you know, Mims is a guy I was very high on. There were some rumors that the Jets may be looking to trade down in the first round. And I figured Mims would be a guy who they may have looked at if they had moved down maybe 10 slots in the first round. So to get him at pick 59, be able to trade down and pick up an extra third round pick, that's as close to a dream scenario as you could get for this team. Ashton Davis was kind of a polarizing pick within the fan base because Jets have a quality safety pair in Jamal Adams and Marcus May. But I think it could be a really solid pick for this team. And I think the fact that you have Adams and May there means that Davis will be brought along slowly. He can kind of go on his own pace. And if he earns a spot on the field, I'm sure Greg Williams can figure out a way to utilize him. You know, you mentioned Cameron Clark, and I've talked about how the Jets have not invested in the offensive line. Cameron Clark was the second time Joe Douglas used a top 130 pick on an offensive lineman in this draft class. His predecessor, Mike Maccagnan, used one top 130 pick in his 5 years running the team. So again, the Jets invest in the offensive line. And again, Bryce Hall, you know, you said it. I thought in the third round he would be in play for the Jets. I think it was a tremendous pick in the fifth round. And the only thing I can think of is exactly what you mentioned, Brian. I just think it was that teams could not bring him in and do medical examinations because I was just amazed that this guy fell to the Jets in the fifth round. I thought there was no way they were going to get him on Saturday, the third day of the draft.
Yeah, it's crazy. And you mentioned something there when it comes to safeties. And I know a lot of 49ers fans have gotten really excited when they've heard the name Jamal Adams involved in trade rumors. And now I saw a report actually today, I think, that Marcus May might have been shopped at some point, and it starts to make some sense with them drafting a safety on day two, which was probably pretty surprising. And I like the player, but when you have two really good starters and one, you know, all-pro player in Jamal Adams, is there teeth to the Jamal Adams stuff? Is it just that they don't want to pay that much to a safety? Is it that he actually wants out? Because it seems like, depending on the day, the reports seem like, oh, it's imminent that he's going to get traded and he's gone and he's on the block. And then the next day you feel like, oh man, they're going to sign him long-term. He wants to be there. They want him there. Which is it?
I think that some of the trade talk has been overstated. There were all these rumors going at the deadline. The Jets were looking to trade Jamal Adams. That was not the case. The Dallas Cowboys called the Jets, and the Jets essentially told them, all right, we want a first round pick and 2 second round picks, or a first round pick, a second round pick, and I think Zach Martin. So the Jets put a huge price tag on Adams. It was kind of a situation where the Jets were saying, you know what, if you're going to give us an offer we can't refuse, then we'll take it. But the return the Jets were asking for Jamal Adams did not suggest that they were really looking to deal him. Now, Adams is looking for a big contract, so it's not clear whether the Jets and he will be able to work out a long-term deal. I'm not saying he's definitely going to sign long-term with the Jets. It's possible that they do end up looking to deal him if they feel like they're not going to be able to work something out. But I do feel like this might be the media, especially the New York media, maybe making more of the situation than what it is. Adams said he was skipping the virtual offseason program. I don't really view that as a huge deal. I think the Jets would like to extend Adams long term, they've not really begun negotiations in earnest yet. They've kind of had some preliminary discussions. So I think it's unclear right now. I think the Jets' first choice would be to lock him up. It's a question of whether how much he wants and whether the Jets are willing to pay him that. So, you know, I'm not sure whether that really answers the question, because really the situation is kind of up in the air right now. But I would say that I think that the talk that the Jets want to deal Adams is a little bit overstated.
No, that's about the answer I expected to get, because at some point, if a team calls you and you at least give them a price, that means you're willing to listen instead of just saying, yeah, you know what, we're not trading them, period, hang up the phone. So they're at least willing to listen at some point. And then so then the question becomes, like, what exactly is the price? Let's say the 49ers, and I know some 49ers fans out there will love to hear some ideas about some fake trade talks, but let's say John Lynch gets a little froggy and he says, you know what, I want one of the best strong safeties in the NFL. Jaquiski Tartt's going to be a free agent coming up, so let's spend the money. Let's go trade for a superstar safety in Jamal Adams. What do you think that, and actually a teaser here, when we come back, John, I want to hear what your thoughts would be if the 49ers came calling for Jamal Adams, what that offer would need to be. Guys and gals, start the competition today with people important in your mom's life. Mother's Day is her Super Bowl, so celebrate this Mother's Day by scoring her favorite gift of the day. Your mom will be able to travel in her mind to exotic India, sample the food, and laugh at the perils of raising a teenager in 1950s India through a new book of fiction called The Henna Artist. By the way, it's Reese Witherspoon's book club's pick for May. Then anytime in May, post a picture of your Mother's Day recipient holding the ebook or book on Instagram or Facebook and tag the author at The Alka Joshi. A donation of 4 meals per post, up to 10,000 meals, will go to Feeding America. So guys and gals, buy The Henna Artist today at your favorite bookseller, including Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Walmart, Costco, and Target, and make mom the ultimate winner in your family. 49ers, Jets, crossover, John Butchko of Locked On Jets, my guest here. Okay, fake trade time, John. Niners call the Jets. What's the offer to pry Jamal Adams away?
I'd go with the same offer they made Dallas, which was a one in a pair of twos.
One in a pair of twos. Well, the 49ers, they traded their third. They still have their second round pick. So potentially they could make that deal happen if they really wanted to. I don't think they would. So any 49ers fans out there listening, getting excited about Jamal Adams, maybe if he were to somehow hit the free agent market, maybe after playing through a franchise tag, then I could see maybe the 49ers at least making a call to his agent, but I just can't see the 49ers giving up so many more future draft picks like they have in recent history, and especially not future ones, to get themselves a safety when they already have a pretty good safety and a pretty physical guy with height, weight, speed, and Jaquiski Tartt. Probably be better off spending that money in-house, bringing Tartt back, than spending a bunch in trade and in cash to go get Jamal Adams. But it would be really fun. And John, I don't know if you know about this. Jamal Adams has been one of my favorite players since his LSU days. I was like, man, this guy is the type of personality you build your franchise around, because of what he can do in all three levels of a defense, and how instinctive he is, and the way he plays, and the way he seems like a leader. You know, maybe that's a little bit off the mark when you start hearing about someone who might want to go play somewhere else, because that's not necessarily what you want your leaders to be doing, or even being okay with being traded away. So I don't know how much of that comes from his camp, but I do this thing called a shadow 49ers draft, where when the 49ers are on the clock, I make my picks of who I think I would select at that spot, you know, because I don't want to do the hindsight scouting. And this year, Bryce Hall was one of those guys for me in round 5 for the 49ers, and they went another direction. They went with Colton McKivitz, the offensive tackle from West Virginia, with Bryce Hall still on the board. Hall went a few picks later to the Jets. But in 2017, the first pick of the Shanahan and John Lynch regime, I had the 49ers selecting Jamal Adams, even though it was the number 3 pick, and that's so high to be drafting a safety. I just bought into everything that Jamal Adams brought to the table. Niners ended up going with a defensive lineman in Solomon Thomas. It hasn't worked out great. They declined his 5th-year option. The Jets obviously picking up the 5th-year option for Jamal Adams, but I've been a fan of Jamal Adams for a long time, so I would not be upset at all if the 49ers did go down that road, but I think we should probably do as hard as we can to squash that for my Locked On 49ers listeners and say very unlikely to almost nil chance that Jamal Adams ends up playing for the 49ers.
Yeah, and I was actually about to say that that was just me guessing, because I know somebody out there, some right. writer on some website, it's good to say, oh, I heard on the Locked On 49ers podcast, the Jets are willing to give up Jamal Adams for a first round. And the two, I'm just guessing based on what the offer the right. Jets was made to the Dallas Cowboys. But again, I do think that the Jets' first choice is to try and get Jamal Adams extended long term, because I mean, he's as good of a safety as there is in the NFL. Whatever you need from your defense that week, Jamal Adams can do. He's a premium run stopper. If you have a if you have an elite tight end or receiving running back, he can cover that guy. He's a great blitzer. In fact, there was a 2-week stretch this year where he had 5 sacks. This is a guy who can do it all on your defense. And the Jets picked him at 6 overall. As you said, Brian, I mean, top 10 is very early for a safety. Jamal Adams is one of the few guys who can justify that draft position at the safety spot.
Absolutely, yeah. It's amazing. I heard people talking about how he's the best pass rusher on the Jets roster, which is good and bad. It's good for that player, but bad for the rest of the roster if he actually is your best pass rusher as a safety. And he played, I think it was around 400 snaps. He's played at free safety as well as covering slot receivers. So, I mean, you can play him everywhere on a defense. It's pretty amazing and pretty fun to watch him play with how instinctive he is, which is really the thing that stands out. He's moving and going to where the ball is going to go before the snap even happens, which I think is really cool. And I think he's allowed to do that in the Jets defense. I think some defensive coordinators might not like the freelancing he does potentially, but Jamal Adams, fantastic player. He is a Jet and will probably not be a 49er. So real quick, to end this conversation, just generally with the Jets, what do you think has to go right? What has to happen for the Jets to be maybe what the 2019 49ers were and take that big step and be a playoff team in 2020?
Well, I think you have to look at the offensive side of the ball. The Jets had a pretty good defense last year, and their special teams was near the top of the league. The offense was just one of the worst units in the league. They were in the 30s in a number of statistical categories. So I think the first thing is the free agents that they signed on the offensive line need to produce. And so does I think the Jets are going to be looking for day one contributions from their first two picks. I think Becton needs to be able to step into, I don't know whether he's going to play right tackle or left tackle off the bat, but I think he needs to be a day one starter and needs to have success, because even the guys the Jets signed, they really are not great run blockers. Becton's like the one good run blocker on this line. So I think to get Le'Veon Bell going, they're going to need Becton to be able to contribute day one. And you look at their receiving core, there are lots of question marks there. Rashad Perryman's guy they signed from Tampa Bay, very inconsistent during his career. I mentioned Chris Herndon, kind of a lost 2019 season. A lot of talent, though. Again, was good as a rookie, really showed promise in 2018. And then Denzel Mims, what are you going to get from him? Some people view him as a project. Other people felt like maybe he's more of a plug-and-play guy based on how quickly he took to the full route tree in the Senior Bowl. So I think there are lots of wild cards on the offense. I think the defense should be solid. I think that Greg Williams did a really good job with the defense last year. I think the special teams is there. The question is, how much can this offense improve? And that, I think that's ultimately going to help determine how much Sam Darnold grows in year 3.
That is John Butchko, host of Locked On Jets. John, I'm excited to talk to you again the week of the Jets 49ers matchup in 2020. We'll find out later this week when that matchup will be happening on the 2020 NFL schedule. Thank you so much, and talk to you soon.
Yeah, and when we talk before the regular season game, I will tell you that it's going to take something drastic for me to pick the Jets in that game, because looking at this right now, I mean, objectively, you guys are going to be happy with me that week.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That one's a tough one. And but hey, it happens quick. If it's later in the season, I was that way early in the season. I was sort of pumping the brakes with the 49ers, trying not to pick them every week, saying, oh man, maybe this is the week, trying to be real about where the 49ers were. And they kept winning. And it was like, yep, I don't care who they're playing, picking the Niners now. So maybe that'll be a special season for the Jets coming up in 2020.
Well, hopefully, who knows, Brian, maybe stranger things have happened than us talking twice next year.
Hey, things can change very quickly. So yeah, maybe even we'll talk for a second time later in the season too. Wouldn't that be something? All right. Well, we'll talk to you then.